Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Pats Uncovered. It's a podcast where we talk to people with untraditional backgrounds into technology and how exactly they got to where they did. My name's Akansha, I'm your host, and I mean, it's an interesting thing. I'm assuming most people who kind of come and listen know that it's me talking, because it usually is. But look, we'll kick off there today, I guess. And I've got a great guest with me today, who's Nikki Riggs, and I'll let her do her own introductions as usual for the podcast.
Yeah, hi everybody. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me. My name is Nikki Riggs. I am currently a software engineer at a company called Envato. They're Melbourne-based. They refer to themselves as a startup, but they're actually celebrating their 15-year birthday today. So, you know, not really a startup anymore. I've been working there for about a year, but I'm a career changer. So I went into software engineering 2 years ago. Went and did a boot camp, and then you and I met, didn't we, at the picnic?
Yeah. I was contemplating whether I should or shouldn't talk about how we met. I'm like, no, we 100% should, because it was just so funny how this kind of came around. If people listen to this in like years to come, we're currently in a pandemic, and vaccines are really hard to get a hold of in Australia for some reason. So Nikki literally tweeted about the fact that she like went through the vaccines, and I was just like, how? Where did you do it? Tell me the details. And we got chatting. Yeah, and that was that, and we were kind of just chatting about vaccines in this time. And I'm like, wait, Nikki, you're a great person to have on. Please help.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
So look, let's dive right back in and talk to me about kind of what was happening around high school, college, like what were the decisions, what was the thought process, like where were we at?
High school, college. Yeah, so in high school, did a program called Running Start, Washington State. So I'm American, grew up in Washington State in a very rural community. Like my town was like 10,000 people, very small. Neither of my parents graduated college. So they like wanted me to go to college, but you know, they just didn't really have any idea how to even like apply, you know? So I didn't have a lot of assistance or support there. And I also came from like a very conservative religious background. And so like a woman having a career wasn't really that prioritized or even really talked about. In high school, I did a program called Running Start, where I had the ability to go to a community college for my junior and senior year of high school, which was like really fantastic and saved a lot of money, because money in our college in America is insanely expensive, and people, you know, come out with like $200,000 of debt with like an arts degree, and then like make $30,000 a year. So it was great to like be able to get those 2 years under my belt, which is really good. And then I went to university. I just studied something like communications and sociology, you know, something that's like not a hard technical skill that you can like translate really easily. I did a mission for the church that I was affiliated with at the time. And then when I came home, it was the recession. So it was 2008. When I was like trying to get a job and like going back, and it's like not gonna happen, right? Like not. It was such a depressing time. Like, as I know that Australia didn't feel it as much as America did, right? Because like Australia didn't have the like housing crisis that like America did. And then but like I remember going to a bar, and the people on the right side of me and the people on the left side of me were both talking to their friends about getting laid off and how there's tons of layoffs at work. Like, it was just in the air. You know how, like, everyone's talking about vaccines and COVID right now? It's just in the psyche. It's, like, that's definitely at the time. It's, like, really, really hard. So
I remember it was, like, sorry. It's interesting because I would have been... So 2009, I was in year six, I remember, and it was that stage of like I was forced into watching the news every night at 6 p.m. Mom's just like, sit down and watch the news,
yeah,
it's good for you, you'll learn something. And I still remember every single night, the only thing they'll talk about for 20 minutes out of the 30 minute like slot would be recession. And I never understood that word for years. As in, it took me like second year of college to, well, I understood what it was by then, but I took second year of college to be like, oh, this is what went wrong.
Yeah.
Oh my God, now I get it.
Yeah.
But it really was just like, it didn't matter who you were at that stage. You knew it. Like, you knew the term, you knew what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get what was happening, but it was everywhere. Mm-hmm. It was so bizarre.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. You were so mature. I am like shocked that you were in year six in 2008 or 2000, like whatever. My mind is blown right now. I like really thought you were so much old. Like, you are very mature with how you present yourself. Yeah, it's like, I mean that as a massive compliment. So yeah, like I think especially at that age, like, yeah, you're not going to understand what's going on, but it was a global financial crisis, right? So it was a terrible time to try to find a job. Everyone's getting laid off. So, you know, what do we do when we can't find a job? We go to school, right? Like, that's what you do. You just, like, get more schooling under your belt. So I was living in Chicago at the time. I went to University of Illinois at Chicago and got an urban planning degree, which I loved. But, you know, I went for 2 years thinking, surely, at the end of those 2 years, the recession's gonna be like figured out. Like, surely I'm gonna get a job. It'll be great. But what ended up happening was it wasn't great. It was still in recovery mode. And like places are still struggling. So I did like a ton of like unpaid internships, got really burned out doing that. And then finally, kind of landed my feet at an architecture firm doing accessibility work, which was one of those things that I didn't like. I like stumbled into like disability advocacy. And one of those things where I'm like really glad that I have had that experience, even on a technical level, where I understand things that I like, yeah, value more than I did at the time. So yeah, I worked at that architecture firm for 4 years. They were really good to me. They were small, but, they just like were a little bit old school. Like, architecture in general is pretty old school and don't get paid well. You know, a lot of places will do stuff for free just to be able to like get it in their portfolio. And so it's like really hard to compete. Yeah. It's,
oh, wow. I would have never, like, I think I actually had a friend who did her architectural degree. And this is kind of where like that age thing comes back a little bit. So she did like 2 years of the degree, didn't like realize she wasn't a big fan, dropped out and came back and did first year into my degree. So we're like great friends now. But remember, it was like a year into college and we both realized that, like, so in Ireland, it's year 9 exam, like state level exams, and then year 12 exams.
Yeah.
Like so she was doing her year 12 exams when I did my year 9 exams at the same time. And we were both just like, oh my God, what? No. But she talked about architecture a lot. And I think that was a part of it where no one really talks about that struggle in architecture of like, it sounds cool, it's such a great job, but like, I don't think I've ever actually heard what they do, like, other than drawing up buildings. I'm like, yeah, that's, everyone needs one, right? But no.
yeah, it's a really undervalued industry. And yeah, they like struggle. Like, if you're at the top of your game, like if you're a partner at your firm, you might be getting like 110, 120 a year, you know, like it's not, I mean, there's like any industry, like if there's a painter, you know, like painters, there's some painters somewhere that are getting millions of dollars, but that's like few and far between, right? And the same is with architects. Like, there are some architects that are wildly successful, but it's not like masses of people that are doing well in the industry. So yeah, I was just at that firm, and I think, I didn't know the term at the time, but I know it now, it's called intrapreneurs. So there's entrepreneurs, right? Where you're like, interested in like trying out an idea, putting it out into the market. And I was an intrapreneur in the sense that like I had a lot of ideas for the company and I was like curious to like tinker around and try things out. And the company like could not be fussed. You know, they were just like, Nikki, like, no, thank you. Like, and I'm like, I listened to this great like Harvard Business Review podcast. I think we could start doing this with our clients. I think it would really resonate with them. I think it would help us, blah, 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 project management. They're just like, just, no, like, go.
Yeah, I've been there. I know that.
You are like 25 years old. We've been in this industry for, 40 years. We don't need your Harvard Business Review podcast ideas. Thank you very much. So, yeah, very like millennial, right? To like come in and think that you have value in an industry where someone's like has like years and years and years of expertise and you're like, "Listen to me." But I guess I still just kind of needed to be at a place that maybe, sure, dismiss my idea, but at least make me feel like you're interested, just like a little bit. But they just like weren't, right? So
Yeah, it's like, I mean, like I've said this. Okay, I appreciate that, but this is why this doesn't work. Like that works so much better
yeah.
than go away.
Right. It's like I'm listening to you, but let me explain to you why what you're saying is problematic. Like, give me a little bit of critical thinking as opposed to just like dismissiveness. So yeah, I was actually, while I was working there, I had a baby and I had thought about this like pain point that I was having of like working with a baby who would only wanted to be nursed and would not take a bottle and then having to go to the office and blah blah blah. So I was thinking co-working at the time was just up and new. Like people didn't know the word co-working like they know it today. Like there wasn't WeWork at that point. And so I thought, oh, it'd be incredible if there was a co-working with childcare space and like melding the two, right? So you could go drop your kid off, get like a days of work in, go like in my case, nurse my baby when I needed to nurse my baby, go home. So I started to work with a woman. I started to work with different spaces, one working with a co-working space and a woman-owned co-working space and then a woman-owned play space. And so at the co-working space, I would do pop-up childcare. And at the play space, I would do pop-up co-working. And I actually like got a lot of publicity around it. There was like a lot of amazing traction. There was a lot of people who were interested in the idea. And the Chicago Tribune wrote me and this other woman up on their, I was on the front cover of the newspaper. And one of my coworkers, like, or the architecture firm came and like I came into work and like they put the newspaper on my desk. Like, what the, like, what do you do? And so, because I had just kind of been doing all of this in secret.
Yeah.
And I think that was like the moment for me of like, yeah, I need to be done here. I need to like quit this architecture firm. Like, this clearly isn't, this is time. I'm past my time here. So yeah, so I stopped working at the architecture firm. I started like really kind of plowing through with the co-working and childcare. And for lots of reasons, I've wrote a blog post on it. It's not a viable business model. Figures putting trying to put two business model, two really hard profit margin business models together. Why would that not be successful? So yeah, it didn't work. So what I loved about doing that was like so many of the amazing, it was majority women who, mothers that came in. There were some fathers too, but it was majority mothers who came in and I loved talking to them. A lot of them were freelancers and business owners, and I loved talking to them about their work. And so I started to do some like freelancing and consulting for those women, which was so much fun, like very up my alley as far as that kind of like entrepreneurial mindset. And oh, great, like you have this product, let's see how we can like get it into the market, let's see how we can sell it, let's see like how fast we can get your business to grow, when we need to pivot, all of that. So
I love that. Sorry, it's just really funny. Yeah. Where, like, no one listened, like, in the architecture firm when you tried to get them to listen, and, like, no one was just like, okay. And now you've literally turned that around to, like, hi, come listen to me.
Well, and I think that, like, yeah, it's just, like, a difference in setting of personality and mindset, right? And so, like, people who are entrepreneurial, like, they're open to ideas, they're open to risk in a way that when you're in a very fixed industry, it's really hard to change your ways when you're like, we have this figured out now, like, this is how it works. Like, I've heard this with about the publishing industry, right? Like, still very old school, still very hard to, like, get in. You have to go through this very, you know, archaic process. So yeah, so anyway, yeah, it was like, definitely I found my people, right? Like, I found the people who I could kind of talk to in a, and, you know, I definitely had that, like, imposter syndrome of, like, well, I'm not an entrepreneur. That's for, like, you know, tech bros that are, like, coming out of Google and starting up Airbnb or whatever, right? But then I just really feel like entrepreneurship, in my opinion, is, like, open to anyone. It's like, you have an idea, you're trying to put it into the market, you're trying to sell it, you're an entrepreneur. Like, you don't need permission from someone else. You don't need to go get an MBA. Like, to me, like, it's so funny to me when people, like, are like, oh, I want to go to entrepreneurship, let me get an MBA. It's like, you want to, okay, cool. Like, do you want to, like, do you want to have a business, or do you just, like, want some, like, education, like, credentials? Like,
that's it, isn't it? It's that difference of, like, hey, I want to do something, or I want the title of doing something.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I can see, like, if you want to be a consultant for, like, McKinsey or Deloitte, sure, like, go get an MBA. But, like, if you want to be an entrepreneur, like, just start a business. Start anything. Start any business, you know?
You will learn. Oh, the trips and falls in there. You'll get it.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, it was great. And I was, kind of found my niche of working with creative women entrepreneurs, and I really loved that. I would do workshops and hosted a couple of retreats, which was so lovely. We would do dinners, and it was just so much, I had so much fun with it. And then I started to get pretty interested in the tech space of entrepreneurship. And so, like, that at that point, I had moved with my family to Australia and settled in Melbourne, and was, like, really trying to figure out how to get an accelerator of sorts going, focusing on women entrepreneurs, and that didn't really get off the ground. I found Australia to be kind of difficult to come into as an outsider. I found that people here really, it's like who you know, and people don't make introductions for you unless you're like, you went to their private high school with them, or like, I just found it to be very, people were very suspicious of an outsider.
And I think it's, like, even like, not even just for business, like, which is kind of where the networking, like, it's important, those kind of aspects of, like, a working life in Australia. But even just, like, I remember, like, and it comes back to, I remember moving here, and I've talked about this so many times, where I was just, like, I was friendless.
Yeah, how old were you?
So I had just graduated. I just graduated out of college, so it was, what, 21?
Okay.
22? Something around that. So, yeah, that would have been 2018. Yeah, the end of 2018, so like 3 years ago now, I would have moved. And it was a case of like, hey folks, I'm moving to Australia next week. Bye.
Yeah.
Because my family was here, so I was moving out, like, back home, essentially, in a way. But, like, I grew up in Ireland. So they, it's a whole scenario.
Mm.
But I moved and I was just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know anyone here. Like, how do you just find your people?
Yeah.
Like I said, in a city that's 5 million people, which is more than the country of Ireland. So when you come from, like, hey, you probably, like, through, like, a second or third degree connection, you probably know almost every person in the country. to like, here's my little niche place. I'm north side of the river and I'm in the eastern suburbs. That's all I know.
Right. Yeah.
It was so weird and interesting, but like, I kind of settled in. I was kind of like, I was at a grad program, so I had like that support and like other people around. But I don't know how, like, that is a really interesting point that you brought up of like, how do you find your place?
Yeah.
When you don't have like those kind of, at least some kind of structure in place to do it.
Yeah, totally. So do you feel like you made friends okay? Like,
I mean, I am not friendless anymore, I will say that. Right. Yeah. No, but I think a lot of it at the start for me was literally just going to meetups. And that was like a record, like my friend, or it was a friend or a my cousin, or someone had been like, go on to meetup and just, you'll find people into the same things as you in different places.
Yeah.
And I went to a lot of meetups, and meetups are super awkward when it's just you on your own.
Yeah.
You don't even know, like, if you bring someone with you, like, you start talking to other people, but when you're on your own, it's actually super hard.
It's really vulnerable.
To just be like, hi, I want to join this little group of chat.
Yeah.
And like, maybe I won't. I'm just, yeah, I'll be in a corner. It's okay.
Yeah. And I feel like I've been to a lot of different meetups, and I feel like some are just like awesome and others are way awkward. It's really interesting, the different vibe. Yeah. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Which ones have worked for you, which, I mean, yeah.
Women Who Code. I mean,
yeah.
Women Who Code is like, I think that was one of the first few. As Adonna Edwards is essentially someone who, the Victoria team lead, essentially, and she's my boss, and like, literally the coolest boss I've ever had. Mm. And I still chat, like, we still chat, we still catch up, like, one of my favorite people. But she kicked off Women Who Code again in Melbourne, so wasn't really going at that stage, it had kind of been dormant, so she kicked it off. I was like, hey, I'm doing this thing, come join. I'm like, I'll be there.
Cool.
I love you. Why not? Like, wait, okay. And that's kind of how it started. And I was just like, oh, these are all these people who are doing like generically the same things. Like, whatever, like the actual work is probably different. But it was just such a kind of like a supportive, like open space and it was safe. I was just like, you know what? This is it. This is my place. Mm-hmm. I like this.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked really well. And I mean, it just spiraled into what it has become today. And I think still to this day, like our monthly meetups, even though they're virtual, they're the only really ones that I go to. I'm like, oh, these are my people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They make the day better. And I'm like, yes, okay.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I think a lot of meetups like stopped the pandemic. And I think it's nice to have like a bit of consistency. I personally cannot do like more online stuff. Like I just am so screen fatigued. I think I tried to in the beginning because it's like, yeah, be connected. And then I like to connect, like just let me go in the existential spiral and like, cry, you know. So
I think at the start was like interesting because it was just like, oh my God, I can go anywhere. Like globally, it's all open to me and it's cool. And then I'm like, no, this is too much choice. I don't want, no, I can't.
Yeah.
And then it just became, I've been at my laptop from 8 a.m. and now it's 9 p.m. Oh my God, this is ruining my life.
Yeah, totally.
So it's now come down to like maximum 2 meetups a month, I think, for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it's a good level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, right. That was a great little tangent.
Yeah,
but coming back to you, you've just started to get accelerators going.
Oh, yeah. Like I was trying to get it up off the ground and I just started to kind of run into this like massive like distrust, like massively people like, who are you type of a approach. Is like, oh, like to me it doesn't matter who I am. I mean, I think it matters to a certain level who you're working with, right? But it's like, this is just an idea and I don't see anyone doing it in a good way. Like there was She Starts, but there was a lot of like women coming out of that program who found it really problematic, and the amount of percentage that She Starts was asking for the amount of money that they were giving was absurd. And there was just, I thought that there was a massive need for it and I wanted to try to tackle it. And I just found it to be more difficult than what I thought is reasonable. I also worked with an angel investor firm that invests in women-owned businesses for a little bit. And that was fun and interesting in different ways. And I did some consulting for another accelerator program that at Acme X, which was really cool and fun, working with creatives who were wanting, you know, who had like scalable products, which was really, really cool. But then I just started to I worked, they call it an EIR, it's an entrepreneur in residence, and at this I'm not going to say the name. You could look at it on my LinkedIn if anyone really cares. But I started to like see some really problematic behavior of just kind of the tech industry like getting out of hand, like people in tech and investment that like didn't know what they were doing and like not even like looking at entrepreneurs' product before they gave them money. And even if they did look at their product, they wouldn't even know what they were looking at. Like if they were to ask for the code base, they would have no idea if it was just like copied and pasted JavaScript from a, whatever site online, or if it was actually for their product, So I started to get like really disillusioned, and all entrepreneurs' products were AI and machine learning, of course, right? And so,
Buzzwords, gotta hit them all.
yeah, like I have my site on Squarespace, but it's AI, like it's an AI product. So I started realizing, like, wow, like this is a problem, but I'm also a part of the problem. Like, if I want to be in this space, I don't really have the, I even though I'm suspicious and I know stuff's up, I know the jig is up, I know there's smoke and mirrors, I can't point to your code base and be like, this is an AI, bro. Like,
This is like, well, this is an if statement, and you're basically telling it what to do, so please go away. I've seen that so many times, it's actually scary.
Well, I feel like I've actually heard that from a lot of AI engineers that it's just like a bunch of conditionals and that's like it. So like I still can't like speak to AI, but I can speak to a code base, right? Like I can at least like I don't have the expertise to speak to AI and machine learning, but I have the expertise. It's I feel confident that if you gave me a code base, I could get familiar enough with it to be able to tell you if it's working or not, if I can run the test, if the tests are shit. Like I feel like I have a bit of expertise at that point, at this point, where I can do a little bit of technical due diligence and I couldn't at the time. And so, yeah, that's what initially kind of drew me in, like to doing some self-learning. But then as I started to do more self-learning, I started to realize like, wow, I really like this. Like, I really like that the technical, like it either works or it doesn't. And there's truly, it's like a drug. It's like a dopamine hit, right? Like when something works, you're like,
Oh my God, you laugh at this. So, for the podcast, because at the moment it isn't very inclusive because it's just something you can listen to or what, like listen on YouTube kind of a thing. So I've been working on doing like a speech to text so you can read
Yeah,
it as a
cool.
transcript if you want it. My God, trying to get that code to work. I've spent like so me by the time this episode comes out, it'll be all done and everything because I think I've got it done now. But like literally spending days of just like I want to bash my head into the door, and then that 1 minute of like that high of oh my God I got it is worth hours of like torture somehow, and I don't understand how that works, but it does.
Oh my God, yeah, it's like a buildup of like stress and frustration, and it like the release is like it's like a an amazing. But then like my problem is that like I have the release for like 2 seconds and I feel so good, and then I'm like back into the torture. I'm like, what's the next
But see,
problem?
but like that really is just like, oh my God, I got it. I can do it all now, right? It's that little like self-indulgent, like I just got this. I can keep going, and then it's just you try and keep going, and these are things you don't know, and you're gonna have to figure it out, and you're back to the torture, and you're like, oh my
Yeah,
God, I hate it.
but I feel like the wins along the way does kind of build up a conf it builds up not a confidence, because I think confidence in some ways is like bad. I feel like it almost like builds up a resilience, right? Like it builds up a patience for like, okay, I think if this is gonna take 15 minutes, let me just tell myself it's probably gonna take 3 hours. Like that's probably what, you start to kind of learn those things of like everything's gonna take longer than what you think it is. Everyone makes similar mistakes. You're gonna make really like silly mistakes, like spelling mistakes, and that's what's gonna be holding you up for an hour, like so Yeah, and I also like remember before I went into tech, hearing people be like, you're always learning. You always have to like, there's a new technology that's going to come out that you have to like, get familiar with. And I remember thinking like that's so daunting. Like that sounds terrible to me. Like that does not sound like interesting. And then I realized, like, I don't know, something switched for me of like, why wouldn't I want to be in an industry that's constantly, there's something I can always learn, there's something I can always grow, there's always opportunities, like there's millions of opportunities in tech. And that's just like, I'm like sold, I like sold, I like love it. I'm so thrilled to be here. And I think that this is especially true for women, but I have a lot of people because of my background, I have a lot of people being like, you should, have you considered product management? Have you considered being a BA? And I kind of want to give them the middle finger, but I don't. But it's like, no, I want to be really, really technical. Like I am committed, I am here, I'm determined. Like I want to be super, super technical. I do not want to be a product manager, thank you very much. But I think it's like really easy for people because, like, for example, I just joined a new team and I started to see some things, some like habits building that's like racking up code debt. And so I like wrote up some documentation of like, hey, maybe we can like start doing this like architectural design review and like get some consistency. And I think that when you do that kind of work, people start to kind of peg you as a BA, you know?
Non-technical person.
So I feel like it's like I'm in an interesting position now because I'm having to be really vigilant about what I'm choosing to do, how I'm choosing to spend my time, and things that I feel like is just like being a good team member, like having an onboarding doc about our meetings, right? And what to expect from the meetings and how they fit into agile practices and how our team has evolved them. And is this a meeting to ask questions or is it not a meeting to ask questions? Like something I wish I would have had when I came on. Like I did
I
spend
think,
time. Oh, go ahead.
no, I mean, it's interesting, especially in tech, and I've noticed this. It's where, if for some, like, I mean, for some reason, it's like if you keep your head down and you just code, you are a technical person. The minute you like lift your head up, being like, hey, this could be better in general, which would make my code better, it's like, no, you're not technical anymore. You can do the rest of it. And you're like, excuse you.
Yes, totally. Yes, it's really interesting because to me, that's like not being a technical person. That's being a yes person. That's just like not having critical thinking skills. You're just trying to, you're not thinking about the product. You're just thinking about getting the test
The
to
end product.
pass or whatever. Like an example of this is we have this list that's called bad words. And on the list of bad words, which you would think is like the F word, right? On the list of bad words, there's like abortion and there's Chinese and there's, like Muslim. And I'm like, why is this list called bad words? Excuse me? Excuse me? There's like a Chinese engineer on our team. And I'm like, why do we have this list called bad words? When like abortion's not a bad word, Chinese isn't a bad word. Like, what are we doing? And they're like, oh, well, this is, it's like, if it's like, these are words that if they're paired together, it's, we're wanting to flag them. It's like, okay, that's like very different, right? Like, this needs to be called like potential words that are potentially used for abuse, right? Like abusive behavior, words that we want to flag, like, words to flag, potential words. Like, there's so many different naming conventions. And I feel like it's that kind of thinking where, like, an engineer is just like, oh, let's just call it bad words and move along with our day. And I just, like, I can't do that, right? Like, that's not, I cannot move along with my day. Like, that needs to be solved right then. And I think that, like, when people are really, sometimes when people, and that's not like all technical people, But I just think that when you're just thinking about a technical solution, you don't think about the product at hand, you don't think about the domain, you don't think about like what's the kind of environment we want to create, what's the kind of thinking we want to foster, you're just going to run into problems. So, anyway, yeah.
I mean, this is these are the things that essentially lead into those biases. Like, I mean, I'm talking from an AI point of view, but like when you look at models that have problems or any of that kind of stuff, this is where it comes from because everyone's just doing their little bit, but not seeing how it all works together. And you're like, haha, no, please stop. You're ruining lives by doing this.
Yeah, totally. Right. And then someone else is going to come down the road, pick up that list that says bad words, and they're like, oh, this is the F word. Like,
Okay.
let's you like just totally erase all these words from our code base or whatever. And it's like, so we're erasing like Chinese people from our code base or whatever, you know? Like,
That is exactly that danger. But look, so you ended up going into a boot camp because you started
oh,
self-learning
yeah,
because you
sorry.
wanted to start pinpointing. No, that's perfect. So you were basically you're like, okay, well, I don't understand this, but I know this is not what it says it is. Let me figure it out. So is that what led to the boot camp you said?
So I was like working with an accelerator, working with some startups, being a little bit sus about like the behavior that was happening in the industry, getting pretty disillusioned with what was happening as well. And then just wanting to have those hard skills. So yeah, I went to a boot camp starting October 2019. I finished that in December 2019. That's when you and I met. And then yeah, started interviewing a ton of places. And actually, from Women Who Code, I went to one of the meetups. It was at Vanguard. I'm invested with the Vanguard. I really believe in their product. I met with some engineers. The pandemic hit in like March in Australia, and I was talking to two different companies like really seriously. One was Vanguard, another one was Envato. And Vanguard was like, cool, we are like a financially stable business model, so we continue on with our hiring. We're not laying anyone off, actually. We're going to continue hiring because we've been through this before. And yeah, they're just a pretty great company that way. And so they hired me. Envato was like, you are our preferred candidate, but we, there's just a lot of unknowns, So a lot of companies were just like, we've got to like circle the wagons. And some people saw it as opportunistic where they were laying a ton of people off. But it's like, see, I love seeing the like karma of people who laid off software engineers and now they're trying to hire them back and they have to hire them back for like 40% more.
It's the market is bizarre, but like it's such an interesting, and also sorry, I'm like actually shocked at the fact that you've pivoted and tried to get a job, but also in another pandemic. Like the other one was a financial pandemic, but like
Exactly.
at this,
Oh my,
it's bizarre.
thank you. I like bless your heart for like remembering the trauma that I have. Yes. So I like went through the same. I was like, it was so much that like, oh my gosh, this is my life. Like I'm trying to like upskill and then I just go into recessions and this time a recession pandemic. Like it was so triggering to me of like this is I'm just my career is set back again, yet again when I'm trying to like get things up and running. So yes, but looking back, it was like the best thing I could have done. It was the most amazing timing given the crunch that I was under. It was like it couldn't if I would have stayed in the startup space, like oh God, shoot me. Like it would have been so hard. And I'm so lucky, honestly, that like the timing worked out the way that it did. So yeah, it started at Vanguard, worked there for 5 months. Vanguard wasn't really in a place to like mentor juniors at my level, like how green I was. And Envato came along and said like, hey, we're actually starting up our apprentice program again. Are you interested? You were our preferred candidate in the past. We haven't reached out to anyone else. We wanted to see, we know you're working, but and I was like, yeah, like I yes, please. Just because the apprentice program is just so kind of a very, very unique. Like there's no other program in Australia that's like it with how immersive it is. It's a 9-month program. You do like kind of condiments at secondments, secondments.
But condiments, I'm all clued up. There we go. I
I'm
like
like
it.
ketchup and mustard, in different teams. So we went to like six different teams and doing lots of different stuff, working with data, working with front end, working with back end, lots of different technologies. We touched, React, Python, Ruby, Elixir. Yeah, it was great. So yeah, I just finished that up in June and then joined a team. And so yeah, that's where I'm at. But I'm actually moving back to America. I know, in October. I know. I
Becky,
know. I
no. Why would
know.
you do this to me on a podcast?
I know. So it's just like a crazy time, our paths uncovered, our paths just curvy. So yeah, my partner and I were here on his visa. So he got sponsored through his company, and it was a dependent on his visa. And his company is just like really terrible, really toxic, and was just like moving around some things, going into a direction he's not interested in going in. So we're just needing to like go back to America. It's just essentially the like easiest thing to do right
Yeah. Fair. But I mean, I think it's, especially with these kind of conversations, I think it's important nearly to point out the fact that, like, yeah, okay, people make decisions on jobs. Like, not every decision on a job is based on, like, oh, this is a company I want to work for, or this is how much I'm going to get paid, or this is the work I want to do. Like, a lot of decisions are made based on circumstances that are completely unrelated to technology
Yeah.
or the work you're doing. Like, there's so many other parts of life that people just don't care about, especially in tech. You're like, you can code, that is all you are. Like, no more. I'm like, there is a person with a life behind this.
Totally. Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, Envato's been really great. They were in talks right now of potentially moving me to America and me still even potentially working with my same team and trying to work around time zones and all of that. But nothing's finalized. It's fairly early days. So who knows? I may be jobless in a couple months searching for another job in America.
But I
But
mean,
yeah.
that is the path uncovered, and we'll probably be back again with, like, I feel like I should go back and be like, hey, what have you done in, like, a little bit of time since, like, every episode? Just kind of like little
Yeah,
pop-up ones. Being
totally.
like, well, uncover more.
Well, for sure. And I'm very interested, Linda and Gwenny, obviously, those are, women that I really admire, and I'm very curious, to see what their futures are like. So I would definitely listen to those podcast
I like it. This is
episodes.
it now, isn't
Yeah.
it? Look, but okay, so we don't know what's going to happen next, but I absolutely love the trajectory of what's come to here. Like, and I think it's interesting, especially to me. I think, yes, all the recessions and pandemics were triggering, but throughout the whole thing, like, it's been kind of that same passion of, like, well, this doesn't make sense, let me figure it out, or there's a better way of doing this. Like, whether that was the childcare and the co-working spaces, like, there is a better way, like, surely, to, like, figuring out the code. Like, there is a better way. And I think that's a great kind of, like, thing to take away. Like, I mean, yes, your skills can be whatever, but I like that passion of, like, well, that's my passion, I'll figure out something along with it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I
Oh,
like
I love
looking at
it.
the world that way. Yeah.
Look, thank you so much for your time today, Nikki. I very much appreciate it. This has
Yeah.
been a great chat,
Yeah.
especially because, like, didn't even know you had a background with architecture. Like, I love these things so much because, I mean, these are things that usually come up in conversation unless it's, like, quite specific to it. So, thank you for sharing.
Well, do you mind if I ask you? So I know that you did data science, so you're doing AI and data science now. How's it going?
It's an interesting world. I mean, I was thinking about, I think you said something and it sparked the same thing, where I think I remember in college thinking, I wanted to be a doctor, but then I was like, oh, actually, that's just exams for the rest of your life. Because you need to obviously know the new med that comes out. I'm like, I'm not about that life. The same thing can happen with actuarial science, where I was like, you have to pass more exams after college. No, thank you. I mean, I actually didn't like the work that they were doing either. There was more to it than just exams, I swear.
Yeah.
Fickle about it. But I think it's interesting that I was like in that mindset of like, no, I don't want to keep doing exams. But you look at AI and it's a shift of like, I'm not required to know this, but it's of an interest. And I think it's cool the changes that are coming that I get to keep up with.
Mm.
Like the speech to text like model that I build and stuff. And I'm like, I couldn't have done that 2 years ago. Because God, I do not have the skills to do that 2 years ago. But the technology that exists now for me to be able to just use a cloud service, not have a really bulky machine to go do it, and all these other aspects that didn't really they existed, but they weren't as accessible back then. So it's an interesting path, I think. I just find some cool things and I start messing around with
That's so cool. You know, it's really interesting with my entrepreneurial path. Like if I were to have met you like 3 years ago, I'd be like, well, let's like package up this like code that you just wrote. Like if you didn't find anything else out there and you just wrote it your own because you saw a need for it, like I'd be like, well, let's sell it. And now, I'm like, you just want to like make the product for yourself. Like you like write the code because you're interested in writing the code. It fits your need. Like, I'm now more in that mindset of like, I'm not really interested in like making a buck off of like the code that I'm writing. I just like want to write it because it's interesting to me to like write what I want to write and build what I want to build.
Exactly. And I mean, actually, sorry, now as we say this, I'm like, hey, if someone's listening and they need a speech to text thing to do and work, reach out because it'll help me support the podcast. So maybe we do want to make a buck.
No, really cool. Like maybe. I think there's really not a product because I'm assuming that you try to find one, right?
Yes and no. I think anything that I did, it'd be like some amount of dollars per minute of transcription. And most of the episodes for me are about 45 minutes. And for someone who's doing this, it's like someone who's doing this kind of very much as an interest and just on the side. Like, I've already got enough expenses on this thing to be adding this kind of stuff. And I'm like, surely I can just do this.
Oh my God. And here we are. I love that so much. Well, maybe you could even like, okay, here I am like being an entrepreneur.
I love it so much. I think I'll just, there's definitely people I can ping. I'm like, I like it. It's a good start. Look, we'll leave that off there. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time with another episode. So till then, take care of yourselves and we'll see you soon.